What is going on, everybody? Welcome to this edition of the Warrior Soul Podcast. This is Chris Albert, and today we've got a really special treat for you. We've got Dr. Chad Waterbury on this episode, and if you don't know who he is, you should. The guy is an absolute strength and conditioning genius. I first heard of him about 10, 12 years ago. I started reading a publication called T-Nation, Testosterone Nation, and this is different than a lot of the other crappy fitness publications out there that are fit for mass consumption. This is the creme de la creme of the strength and conditioning world, writing their thoughts out, giving real, awesome, applicable advice to the masses. And all the stuff in there is scientifically referenced. But Chad is the creme de la creme amongst that group of people. And he's been the strength and conditioning coach for Hicks and Gracie's International Jiu-Jitsu facility. He's worked with a lot of fighters. He's worked with some downright savages. I knew a guy who was doing one of Chad's programs. And Chad is known for doing a mixture of circuit training, hardcore strength training, and body weight training, and with a lot of awesome recovery techniques worked into that. And his athletes are known for their explosive power and their athletic ability. And this guy is really awesome. He's one of my idols in the strength and conditioning world. And it was just a real pleasure to sit down and talk with him to pick his brain. The reason why he came on here is he wanted to give his insights to both the active duty military and the veteran community for ways in which they could increase their performance, increase their tactical performance. And also for those of us who are older and who are out of the military now, ways for us to continue to do strength training, to improve our strength, to improve our ability to burn fat and to build muscle, but also to improve our minds and to help us to stay healthier in our post-military lives. So this is going to be an awesome conversation. Like I said, this guy is an icon and I think an absolute genius in this world. First off, before we get into that conversation, I want to say that this episode is sponsored by F-Bomb Nutrition, a really amazing company run by really awesome people. And they make these delicious, awesome, portable packets of nut butters and fats. Now, I'm always talking about the benefits of a high-fat, low-carb diet. We actually get into the benefits of adapting to fat burning as fuel in our conversation with Chad. And F-Bomb, they've made a way to make it really easy to do that. These packets contain a macadamia nut butter base, and they've also got some coconut butter in there. And these things are absolutely delicious. I'm ripping one of these open a couple of times a day, pouring it into my mouth. Really easy, super nutritious, low sugar, and they use nothing but the best ingredients. And again, they're really awesome people. They're sending packages of these things out to our troops on the front lines. They didn't need to do that. They wanted to do it. They contacted me to get in touch with troops deployed abroad so that they could start sending those packages out. And again, just great people. I'm super privileged to have them as sponsors. If you're looking to try these out, head over to www.droppingfbomb.com and use the code WARRIORSOUL at checkout, and you'll get 20% off of your first order. With that, let's get into our conversation with the awesome, the ingenious Dr. Chad Waterbury. This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's a solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast. And today is a really big privilege for me because the gentleman I'm on with is somebody I've been a real fan with for a long time. And I'll give you a little bit of a story. Back when I was owner and manager of Metroflex Gym in Long Beach, we had this kind of savage that used to come in, and his name was John Rude. And it's like a twist of fate that his last name was Rude, because if you ever saw this guy, he's a giant and a big muscular guy. And he's also really smart, educated guy. But he would go into the back and he'd come up front every once in a while to refill his bottle. He was drinking a BioTest plasma during his workouts and things. And he'd go back there and I hear this crazy grunting. And so one day I'm like, I'm going to go back there and see what's going on. And I see this giant of a man just hanging upside down from some gymnastics rings. And I was like, whoa, that's crazy stuff. What's going on there? And he gave me the whole history, and he said that he was working with a guy named Chad Waterbury. And I'd heard of Chad quite a bit. I'd been reading a lot of different blogs, reading T Nation for a while. And Chad was kind of one of the first guys, I'd say after the bodybuilding magazine phase of fitness, where the bodybuilding magazines had a monopoly on everything. But he was one of the first guys bringing in kind of alternative training methods and talking about strength and conditioning in some of the new and fascinating ways. He's been one of the big innovators out there. And I'm not going to go through his whole story because, I mean, you can literally find pages and pages of him out there on the internet. But Chad, I want to welcome you to the podcast today.
Oh, Chris, it's my privilege to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So we were kind of discussing before we came on, you know, back when I first got into the Marine Corps, it was 1999. And as I alluded to, at that point, we had like one or two bodybuilding magazines to choose from, really, in the fitness world. That wasn't a whole lot of information out there. It was kind of prior to the internet kind of taking hold and making information so widely available. At that point, I was doing a lot of long distance running. I was doing kind of like bodybuilder style workouts, and I was doing all the humps and the training that we had to do in the Marines. And a lot of us had tons and tons of injuries. I'm talking bad knees, bad backs, aging before we well should have been aging. And you know, in your opinion, from that time till now, what's changed? What do we know now that's different?
Well, hopefully smarter programming. I mean, I don't know. We can argue that point with the how Instagram and all those other places have flourished, and you know, but back when I started writing for T Nation, you know, back then it seemed like there's a little bit more of a bar you had to achieve, you know, to get your name and your face out there and such. But that's kind of a circuitous answer to your question. I'm already starting out kind of circling it, but I would say that, you know, you think, oh, well, with all this time that has passed and all this information, you know, we know so much more than we did then. And in some ways we do, but a lot of bad information has still infiltrated, you know, the internet, because people are trying to be seen, you know, and they want to put the latest, craziest thing and the most extreme thing. And it gets people in the mindset that they need to chase fatigue, and, you know, they need to be in pain after the workouts, and, you know, and that's not how it's supposed to be. I mean, training is supposed to make you better, supposed to make you healthier. It's not supposed to make you age faster. But if I just touch on one thing that you said, the first thing I want to touch on is lots of long distance cardio. Now, this is a really interesting topic, because I think on one hand, some people could benefit from some steady state cardio, depending on what their, you know, the rest of their training program is. But when you're talking about a military guy who's getting tons of cardio, and then you add more on top of it, it can be problematic and really age you. You start aging your cells, and it's like rusting out your cells. I mean, you look at people who are triathletes, you know, in their 30s, and, you know, they look like they're in their 50s. But the real problem as well is that repetitive use or repetitive motion cardio will lead to repetitive motion injuries. So if you run for 50 miles a week, you're going to have, you know, all sorts of problems in your outer thigh and your hips and, you know, and all that. So I certainly am not going to be bashing on cardio because I've actually learned a lot more about it, you know, over the last 10 years and studying with people like Pavel Satsalin, who's got this great strong endurance seminar and all that. But it's more of for cardio is you want to take a real non-traditional approach to cardio, meaning you want to do almost like a circuit for cardio. And I'm not talking about strength training. I'm talking about you might jog for four or five minutes, and then you might shadow box for 4 or 5 minutes, and then you might do some like sidestepping with a resistance band. You might do side shuffling. You might do some crawling. To me, that's great cardio because you're not getting any repetitive use injuries. You're not doing the same motion over and over and over. So that's one thing that I would say I think that we understand more is that it used to be, okay, you lift weights and then you go run or you sit on a bike for an hour. And that's not really a smart strategy because, again, especially military guys and just athletes in general, they need endurance not just in their thighs. They need it, you know, in their upper body. I mean, military guys have to carry stuff overhead, you know, all sorts of challenges their upper body needs. So we need to build endurance in those fibers as well. And a simple way to do it is make your, quote, cardio be more full body in nature. So hopefully that answers, you know, one of your questions. The other thing is that, boy, I mean, this is the whole high intensity, just chase and fatigue thing is not ideal for most people because you have, I'm going to speak to military people here because this is a big part of your audience, but you have someone who is under a huge amount of stress mentally and physically. And when you go into the weight room and just do crazy high intensity, insane workouts to failure, I mean, it is a lot of stress on your immune system, your joints and your recovery and all that. So we need to find this middle ground here where you can get the strength training adaptation you need, get the functional strength and muscle you need without absolutely burning out yourself, you know, and then you have cardio that, as I said, is not doing the same thing over and over. I mean, a military guy's walking and jogging and trekking all this time, and then to spend another hour just running on the treadmill, I mean, you're going to have orthopedic injuries for sure. So you need a more intelligent approach to that.
Yeah. I also know that you have a background in neurology as well, right?
Yeah, neurophysiology, right.
Yeah, so one of the questions I have, because the signature injury of the last two wars have been traumatic brain injury. And a couple of friends of mine, Andrew Marr and Dr. Mark Gordon, they've been looking at this issue as one of the big issues as far as being related to the high veteran suicide rate. And one of their theories is that it's not just getting knocked out that matters. It's brain inflammation in general. So meaning if you're dealing with manning a 50 cal and you're getting shaken back and forth, or if you are getting shaken back and forth on a helicopter, if you're in proximity to explosions, that could lead to a low level injury, which could lead to high levels of brain inflammation. My question for you is, given that kind of impact with repetitive use and the high stress and constantly chasing fatigue, what would be the impact there on the brain? And would that make it potentially more vulnerable to these types of injuries?
Well, we can't say at this point, because we just don't have the research on that. And there's not a lot of research related to traumatic brain injuries and high intensity exercise. But you know, just from my standpoint, I think that high stress on the nervous system, whether you're doing like real crazy high intensity interval training with super short rest periods, a la Tabata, you're doing, you know, super high intensity weight training, you know, lots of failure, short rest periods, you know, all this stuff. I can't see in any way, shape, or form that it would help And in most cases, I think it's going to hurt because the body's always, the body needs balance. You know, everything in the universe needs balance. So if you're thinking about someone who's very stressed, who's had a stressed brain, stressed nervous system, let's do things that are less stressful to the nervous system. That's why, you know, mindful meditation, you know, they've shown as little as like 12 or 13 minutes a day with soldiers is so beneficial to boost their, to help overcome depression, to help with recovery, to just be a healthier state of mind. And it just helps with recovery in general from exercise, you know, all that. And then, you know, and then getting back to cardio, you know, if you do cardio in the right way and you're doing some, you know, low intensity stuff, you're just getting a light sweat going, you're doing different activities and not moving in the same plane all the time, you know, this can be restorative. So, you know, you just don't want to add intensity and stress on top of more intensity and stress. And that's why, you know, soldiers and people who have traumatic brain injuries, they need to be, you know, more careful with the amount of intensity and stress they're putting into their exercise sessions.
Absolutely. And what about corrective exercise as far as prepping the body for these types of workouts when you are training hard? When you're working with an athlete, how often are you kind of programming in, you know, working on their recovery and active recovery and things like that?
Well, first of all, when it comes to active recovery or just recovery in general, the number one rule is to don't smoke them in the first place. You know, that's where you have to get really smart programming. And that's why that's, you know, really, really important. Now, in terms of corrective exercise, I'll address that first. All of my clients, all my athletes, everyone I work with, they all do some sort of exercises that would probably be viewed as corrective exercise at the beginning of a program. You know, we turn on the glutes, we turn on the shoulder stabilizers, we turn on the spinal stabilizers. You can call it corrective exercise. Some people would call it rehabilitation. Other people just call it smart training. But that's, I use that for everyone. And, you know, I will mention here, so I have a ebook called Powerful Mobility that you can get on Amazon, and it's just $9.99. And there's a lot of good correctives in there for people who need it. But I haven't worked with anyone who didn't need some sort of whatever you want to call it. Again, prehabilitation, corrective exercise, whatever. We can all benefit from it because there's just, it's really hard to turn on key muscle groups with just doing squats and deadlifts and overhead presses. I mean, those are all great. It's the foundation of any program, but to make the body be able to withstand heavy loads and to help protect yourself from the incidence of injury and all that stuff, you want to be sure that you have all the right muscles kicked on to support the hips, to support the spine, to support the shoulders, you know, and all that. That's where that comes in. And in terms of active recovery, I mean, there's nothing better than just a quick nap, like a 20-minute nap. I mean, that's about as good as it gets. When you look at the positive impact it has on neurotransmitters and hormones and helping with recovery, that's a great thing. If you can't nap, then as I mentioned before, you know, just 12 or 13 minutes of mindfulness or meditation is absolutely terrific. And if people want to know how to do it, there's, you know, plenty of apps out there. I'm not associated with any of them, but there's plenty of apps that can take you through guided mindfulness. But it doesn't even have to be that complicated. It can be as simple as getting in a quiet room and just trying to clear your head. Focus on your breathing. If a thought rushes into your head, something that gives you anxiety or you forgot this meeting or whatever, just let it go, let it pass. And just spend like, you know, 10 minutes or so just focusing on your breathing, focusing on how your feet feel, how your calves feel, how your hips feel, you know, working all the way up to your head or starting in your head and working your way all the way down to the feet. It's things like that that are really important for recovery. And another thing that I'm going to say is that research has shown that by focusing on things that you're grateful for, especially before bed, you get better quality sleep, you get better recovery, you know, you have, it can help overset or offset some depression, you know, things like that. And I'm not saying that's all people need, but these are just simple things that people can do every day. And you want to take it a step further. And they say, when you get up in the morning, same thing, focus on the things you're grateful for, whatever it is. It's your job, it's your family, it's your kids. You know, it's the fact that you have a roof over your head. Doing that kind of stuff throughout the day makes a huge, huge impact. And I know, you know, it's easy for someone, people probably think, oh, you know, someone like me is going to talk about contrast baths and, you know, cryotherapy and all that. And it all can have its place, but it really starts with the brain. I mean, you know that, your audience knows that. So what I want to do is I want to make the brain healthier and, you know, giving it rest periods throughout the day where you're not stressed about things and, you know, doing the meditation and focusing on things you're grateful for. This makes a dramatic impact on the brain in a positive way. And that's huge.
Yeah, that is something that I've definitely incorporated into my life, both gratitude and mindfulness meditation. And, you know, I went through periods where I was homeless, living out of my car, and, you know, didn't have a thing in the world. But the one thing that kind of stuck in my mind was that thank God that I have a car to sleep in. Thank God that I'm in the United States right now and not somewhere else, you know, where I wouldn't have the opportunity to come out of this situation that I was in. And focusing on that whole time really helped me out of that situation. I mean, and it put me in an action mindset to be able to take advantage of the things that I did have in my life that I could use and could maximize.
Yeah. And gratefulness and being happy, it's a choice. You know, well, I want to say, you know, people have had traumatic brain injuries and things like that. That's, you know, that's more complicated. You know, it's not like they want to, you know, have PTSD and things like that. So I'm not talking specifically about them, but I'm just talking about just people, just life in general. I mean, we have a lot more control over, you know, our happiness and our gratefulness than we think. And, you know, they've done lots of research on that. The happiest people in the world and, you know, the least happy people in the world and the happiest people in the world just focus on the things that they're grateful for. And everyone, you know, if you're alive, you can be grateful for something. I remember seeing a documentary, and I can't remember exactly where the man was, but it was an older man who was just riddled with orthopedic injuries and was just as dirt poor as you could be. I think it was in Mexico or it was in South America. And his whole day was he was pulling this heavy cart, and he was completely hunched over and had just tons of, I'm sure, pain all day long, but they said he was one of the happiest people that they interviewed because he said that he got paid to do this all day long, and he was able to put his kids through school with the wages that he made, you know, again, in Mexico or South America, wherever he was. And he said that just made him the happiest person in the world that he could do that. And it's just such a powerful example of, you know, things we take for granted and just, you know, it can always be worse. And a great way to make it better is to focus on the things that you're grateful for and focus on things that are good. And as they say, what you focus on grows. So be grateful, be good to other people, and lots of great things in life will happen.
Absolutely. And it keeps you out of that mode of being the victim or playing the victim where, you know, you're actually placing the blame on everybody else around you and the environment and the world. And, you know, something I like to say is that this world has been testing living things since the beginning, and we're no different. We're living organisms on a planet that has classically massacred living organisms en masse, and we need to take every advantage that we can to own everything in our world and really drive our own purpose and really be mindful of the fact that if we are blaming other people, we're actually giving away control over everything that we could be changing in our lives.
I agree completely. Yep.
Now with meditation, and this is something that I've noticed with myself, when I am super stressed out, I'll actually catch myself not breathing. Like I will be holding my breath and I'll be sitting here on my like, and I'll be literally, I think I could go a few minutes without breathing, without even thinking about it. And since I've started meditating, I've been catching myself more. Is this something when you're training athletes, do you notice them when they're going into their fight or flight mode? Are they inhibiting their breathing? Is this something that meditation helps with?
Well, yeah, meditation helps with everything, but specifically answering your question and, you know, some take home points for people is that with athletes, with fighters, they'll tense up. They'll tense up. And as soon as they tense up and as soon as their brain goes to a state of alarm, they're going to gas. They're going to gas in a hurry. And this is why if you want to train an endurance athlete, and it can be a wrestler, it can be a fighter, MMA fighter, whatever it is, you want to be sure that when you're starting early on in the training camp that you're having them go through their sparring, do their techniques with a relaxed mindset. And you need to really start to ingrain that in them and just like be super relaxed and be calm and start to do the techniques that way. And then once you do that and you program it the right way, then they're going to be able to go faster and faster with that mindset, you know, to stay calm. And this is a very important part of endurance development. So the other thing that I want to say, though, about that is that there was some really interesting research that was done where they had athletes throw a punch or sprint and I think maybe do a vertical jump. But let's just stick with throwing a punch and sprinting, so I remember those specifically. They had them do that at different ratings of perceived exertion. You know, so 10 out of 10 would be just as hard as you could possibly do something, you know, like your life depended on it. 9 out of 10, of course, is a little below that. And then they went all the way down to, I think, 5 out of 10. So theoretically, you know, 50% of your max effort. So they tested people's punching speed and punching power, and they tested their sprinting speed. And it was really interesting because they tested them at 5 of 10, 6 of 10, 7 of 10, 8 of 10, 9 of 10, and 10 of 10. And they found that the fastest performances, the fastest punching speed, the fastest sprints, and the most powerful performances, most powerful punches, came around 7 out of 10 effort. Okay. So when they told them to go about 7 out of 10. Really? So you think, well, why is that? You know, that's surprising. It's because when you start getting close to 10, people tense up. And when people tense up, then they actually can't move as fast. And it just creates stress in the body. So you want to be fast and loose. You know, that's how you want to train if you're a fighter. You want to think fast and loose. And then that's, you know, how you'll really build the type of endurance that you need. And you won't gas. Another thing that's really important for endurance athletes is teaching them to use fat for fuel. And Dr. Philip Maffetone has talked a lot about this. He's amazing, you know, with his endurance research. And he's got a heart rate formula he recommends, which is 180 minus your age. That would be like the max heart rate you ever want to hit to be below the anaerobic threshold. I mean, there's a time and a place where you absolutely should and need to go above that for short periods of time. But if we're just talking about sparring or doing things like that, to get people below that heart rate and to get them to perform well there, then the body starts to use fat for fuel. And the more that you can get the fat to be the primary source of fuel, then the less likely you are to fatigue. I mean, that's just the fact of science, because when you're burning fat for fuel, primarily, you're not going to get the proton accumulation, you're not going to get the blood acidification and all the bad things that go with it. Because as soon as protons start building up in the blood, this is correlated with the lactate threshold, which is a whole nother conversation. And just for the people out there, lactate is not the problem at all. I mean, lactate is actually your friend during exercise. It's that when lactate is accumulating, protons are accumulating with it. So it's guilt by association with lactate. So that's why they may measure the lactate threshold, because they know that protons are going up. But I don't want to get off in this physiology. But when protons are increasing in the blood, bad things happen. Your fatigue goes way up. It decreases the muscle contraction velocity. It decreases nerve transmission velocity and all that. So the point here is when you're trying to perform well, you want to keep those proton accumulations at bay. And one way you do that, again, is to train the body to use fat for fuel. And the other thing about fat is even a lean person has, I mean, days and days worth of energy to provide. So you're not going to run out of it like you're going to run out of glycogen in your muscles. You know, there's a limited amount in there. So as soon as you see someone start to gas or get in that fight or flight stage, that's when you see their performance just absolutely plummet. We've all seen it in MMA fights, in boxing matches, wherever, whatever, where someone is like, all right, they're maintaining their performance, and then whack, you know, they get hit really hard or they get stressed out or whatever. And then they start using, burning tons of sugar for energy, which makes protons accumulate in the blood. And then, like I said, and all those things I just mentioned start to happen. So it's really important that you train people to be in a relaxed mindset. And that's easier said than done, because, you know, all fighters know, all soldiers know, as soon as you get whacked hard, you know, everything goes out the window and everything goes to hell and you're in fight or flight mode. But this is why, you know, those monks and all those people that just train their brain, you know, through these kind of stressful situations, is to keep their mind relaxed and focused in a stressful situation. It's easier said than done. But when you can do that, or at least just improve your ability to do that, you're going to perform so much better and you're going to recover so much faster, because it's going to be less stressful on your body.
That's so interesting. You know, I we've had a number of experts on fat adaptation here on the podcast, and I definitely want to get into the relaxed aspect of it. We've had on Dominic D'Agostino. We've talked to the guys who founded Ketogenics and all these things, the ketone supplement company. And I've written extensively about ketosis and fat adaptation. And one thing I think that gets lost in the literature, for example, is you know, when you look at that recent study that Dr. Volek did up at the University of Connecticut, the metabolic adaptations of keto adapted ultra endurance runners, and talked about them being able to oxidize fat at really high rates of their VO2 max. One of the things I think that gets lost is kind of the difference between the therapeutic form of the ketogenic diet that we see a lot of people going after, that's ridiculously low carb, and then maybe like a modified Atkins version that allows some carbohydrate intake and higher protein intake. What's your opinion on this when it comes to fat adaptation for athletes? You know, for example, is one of your fighters going to be very low carb? And the reason I ask this is because a lot of the guys who are listening to this, you know, particularly the active duty military guys, they'll need to supplement themselves into something like a fat adaptive state, because a lot of them are living off of like MREs and things like that. So, though it is happening out there more and more, I mean, the Navy SEALs, special operations are going more for ketogenic diets and doing a lot of research on fat adaptation and its benefits. But as far as like when you're working with an athlete and the ability to both burn fat for fuel and put the pedal to the metal, as far as you know, utilizing glucose if they need to, how would you construct that?
Well, that's certainly a loaded question.
Sorry. I know.
Okay. Well, let's break that apart a little bit. First of all, you know, there's a time and a place for low carb diets. I mean, it depends on, you know, how they've been eating and what type of performance they need. And, you know, like, you know, cyclists and marathon runners, you know, they need, you know, lots of glycogen and things like that. And obviously they can adapt and use fat for fuel. But one thing is, that I think is pretty well accepted, is that if you're going to drop carbohydrates drastically, you're going to get some loss of performance. You want to keep that in mind. And the research isn't super clear on how long it takes to restore it. But I saw some research recently where it said it took about 4 weeks for explosive athletes to kind of restore their performance, you know, if they went, you know, really low carb. But, you know, there's other studies that have shown, you know, other things as well. Now, you know, the key here is, as you said, you want to get people to use fat the best they can when they're doing their endurance training, their cardio training. And that gets back to doing what I mentioned earlier. You have to train the body to do that. It's just not as simple as just, you know, taking carbs out of the diet. because even though the carbs aren't available, you know, the body has to go through changes to, you know, to make the use of all this, you know, the new amount of nutrients that are available that weren't before, you know, and all that. So do the cardio, can, as I said, you know, the 180 minus your heart rate, you know, learn to really train and perform below that. That's going to help you better utilize fat for fuel. And then the other side of the coin, which I haven't even talked about yet, is building your explosive power. Yeah. And getting stronger, building your functional strength, because, you know, the stronger you are, all things being considered, then the easier it's going to be to do a task. Like, for instance, if we talk about the NFL combine, you know, bench press test, which, you know, we can argue whether that's even should be a test for someone like a football player, but their whole thing is to do as many reps as possible, 225 pounds. And, you know, you think, okay, well, that's an endurance event. You know, some guys are, you know, knocking out 30 reps or so or whatever. And it is, but it doesn't mean you need to train for endurance to be good at that task. So one takeaway that I want to give your audience is when someone needs to do a strength endurance test such as that, or it might be for whatever reason, how many squats you can do with your body weight. And I'm sorry, a body weight load on your shoulders. You know, it's sometimes people, you know, do that test, you know, things like that. If you want to get good at those sorts of tests, you want to just increase your maximal strength. Let me give an example. It's probably better for the military. Military people want to increase their pull-ups, right? That's a big, important thing.
Another one is the CFT. We do have a situation where we do press an ammo box overhead for max reps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me get to the pull-up first before we do the overhead press. So the pull-ups, if you can do, let's say a guy or a gal can do 8 reps. That's it. 8 full range of motion reps before they have to stop. And he or she wants to get up to 20 reps. So you might think, though, you need to start doing, you know, lat pull downs for 20 reps, you know, start doing, you know, 20 reps worth of exercises to train those muscles in a similar way. But that's not going to be an ideal approach. First of all, there isn't a huge carryover between the lat pull down and the pull up, believe it or not. You know, there's similarities, but, you know, you really need to hang from the bar to get better at the pull up. So in that case, let's say, again, the person can do only 7 or 8 reps. They want to get up to 20 reps. The best thing that they can do is increase their maximal strength with a pull-up. So what I'm talking about is the most that they can do for, let's say, 3 reps. So this means they're going to need to put on a weighted vest or use a chin dip belt or hold a dumbbell between their feet or whatever it is. But let's say that person who can do a max of 7 pull-ups for a 3-rep max, it's with, let's say 25 pounds, you know, across his or her, you know, on a chin dip belt. So you want to get to the point where that person can do 50, you know, pounds added for those 3 reps or 60 or whatever it is, depending on how much time you have. And without even training the high rep range, you know, trying to burn out as many reps as you can, just focusing on building your max strength, that is going to be the best, fastest way to get up to 20 reps. People ask me that a lot. You know, I'm stuck at 10 or 11. How do I get to 20? That's how you do it. Now, a very important caveat here is that the reason why the carryover is high between that maximal strength and that endurance is because that is high intensity endurance. Mm-hmm. Meaning, if you take a marathon runner who, let's say a guy whose max squat is 200 pounds, very thin and weak, and you increase his max squat to 315 pounds, let's say, that marathon runner, it's going to have virtually no impact on running a marathon. It's too far separated. So the further the endurance challenge gets from maximal strength, the less carryover it's going to have. And that's why the pull-up, there's a high carryover, because, you know, you're not doing pull-ups for 30 minutes. You know, you're just trying to get to 20 reps. So that's from a programming standpoint for strength coaches out there and things like that. That's what you want to do. Now, the same can be said if you, if you wanted to press something overhead 30 times, a certain load that you can only press 7 or 8, 10 times, that's what you want to do, is you want to focus on building your max strength in that overhead pressing. But if we're talking about carrying your guns or carrying some of your equipment overhead for 15 minutes straight, you know, walking through whatever, you're walking through the swamp, whatever, you're going to have to train that directly, because that the max strength is not going to have a huge carryover. You know, it can help, but the other thing is, I'm not a huge fan of going really heavy on overhead presses. I mean, there's a time and a place for it, but it can be a little tricky. Whereas like the pull-up, it's a quote, you know, safer kind of way to, you know, add load. But that's just, you know, what I wanted to mention here is, if you need to carry something overhead for 15 minutes, then you should just start carrying things overhead for as long as you can. And then when your technique starts to break down, then, you know, get adequate rest and do it again. Another thing with endurance is that it's better to get more, a higher frequency throughout the week. It's just like practicing something. It's better to practice 5 minutes, 10 times spread over a day, than it is to practice for 50 minutes once. So it's kind of like that with building the endurance fibers. And I want to take this opportunity to talk about something you mentioned earlier, where people who have a lot of physical stress and trauma and are pretty beat up, you know, and all those things, and they want to know better ways to train. You know, there's some interesting research that shows, again, my friend Pavel Sotsling has written about this, that shows that if you do certain protocols aimed at the slow twitch fibers, you can actually increase your strength and increase your power if you do it the right way. What the research showed, this Russian researcher showed, was you want to use a load where you fail between 30 to 60 seconds, and you want to do 1 to 9 sets a day. Obviously, there's a huge difference between that, but it just comes down to smart programming. You know, you might do 3 sets one day, one set the next, 4 sets the third day, 2 sets the next. You want to stagger it, okay? You don't want to just do a linear increase. But as I said, that's another topic. But the key point, though, he found, though, is that you need really long rest periods between those sets to get the best benefit. Mm-hmm. I think 5 to 7 minutes is what he recommended, but there really is no rest period that's too long. So again, an example I would give is, let's say you have a guy with beat up knees or beat up shoulders, can't lift heavy. Then what he or she could do is some type of body weight exercise, some type of light load exercise where they're moving very slowly and they're failing around the 30 to 60 second mark. And then, you know, rest plenty of time, depending on what their schedule's like, you know. Maybe they have time for a long workout, a 90-minute workout, and they can rest for 7 minutes between each set. And during those sets, you can work other muscle groups. This is not like you just have to sit around. So let's say you're doing it with a goblet squat, and you can't lift heavy because your knees are hurting you. So you would do a load and do it nice and slow, and you fail around 40 to 60 seconds, 30 to 60 seconds, whatever it is. And then during those 7 minutes when you're waiting before you do another set, you can work, you know, upper body exercises. You could do some dips or some, you know, whatever it is. Work your shoulders, work your abs, so you can make the workout efficient. But then get back to your second set, you know, like at least 7 minutes later. That's one way to do it. But another way to do it that I like to have people do, especially when they're trying to build muscle size, functional muscle size, is I'll have them do it throughout the day. So if it's a day where they're going to do maybe something as simple as calf raises, I want to build someone's calf strength, because calf strength is actually, it's a very important and often overlooked aspect of gait, of performance. Gait, when I mean when someone's walking, when someone's trekking, when someone's going, when someone's hiking, when someone's carrying gear, when someone's running. I mean, people should be able to do 25 full range of motion reps on one leg, a single leg calf raise. You can just try this at home. Take off your shoes, stand there on one leg, you're barefoot, you're wearing socks, and try to do 25 full range of motion reps. And what some people do, what's really smart to do is, I don't know if you can see here, but they have those height measuring devices. You can get them real cheap on Amazon that attach to the wall, you know, where they slide the plastic thing down to where your head is. So these are great for testing this and for calf raises. So you do your first calf raise in front of that, and you kind of adjust it to the top of your head at the top of the calf raise, right? the peak contraction where your leg is straight and you're all the way up. And then you have to touch your head to that every time from there on. This is how I test people. We test people in the clinic because people will say, oh, I can do 25 calf raises, no problem. They don't realize that by the end of it, they're doing partial reps or, you know, 70% of what they were. This has to be full range of motion rep. This is very tough to do. And when you can't do that, you're more likely to have foot problems, ankle problems, knee problems, low back problems, poor performance, you know, lots of things like that. Now back to how I help people increase that strength is I have them do just one set of calf raises to failure, like three times a day. If it's a day where they're doing three sets, and they'll do one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and one in the evening. So there's a long, long rest periods in between, but the longer the better. You know, it's going to help you build strength faster, build those muscle fibers faster. It's going to manage recovery better. I talk a lot about this in my high frequency training, but that's, you know, the more you can spread it out, the better. Another thing that I want to talk about is because I spent so much time for people who've read my stuff on T-Nation over the years or other articles talking about high threshold motor unit recruitment, you know, going after the largest motor units because they had the largest muscle fibers, right, and how important that is. That is really, really important. And, you know, training heavy with the right exercises and training fast, this is good for everyone. These slower tempo sets to failure need to be reserved for, first of all, the calves respond really well to it. But for someone who's weak and needs to build a lot of strength, you not want to focus your time on this. But for people who are beat up, I want to give them, you know, their joints are achy, you know, lots of trauma, they're older, they've been injured, whatever. You can do body weight exercises to failure. You can do light loads of failure. You know, you fail between 30 and 60 second sets and you will build those slow twitch muscle fibers. You might think, well, yeah, but big whoop, you know, it's like those are weak fibers. The truth is that slow fibers per square inch or per square centimeter, however you want to measure them, slow fibers are as strong as fast fibers. It's just that slow fibers are smaller. So you need more slow fibers to take up the same amount of space as the fast fibers. But at the end of the day, they're just as strong. So doing protocols to help them get stronger is great. And it's a way to build muscle, and it will have carryover into things that you wouldn't think. These Russian researchers had these guys do these slow twitch protocols I just covered, and they improved their squat one rep max. They improved their sprinting speed. I mean, this is huge. But again, I can't stress this enough. For someone who is relatively weak or new to weight training, you do not want to spend your time on this. This is for people who are already really strong, and then it's going to give them an added benefit. Or for people, as I said, who have orthopedic problems, can't go heavy, you know, people whose joints are achy. I just want them to know that there are things that they can do to get a good benefit. But the reason why it's not good for people who are weaker or new to training is because they haven't developed the connective tissue strength that they need. They need to get those high threshold motor units recruited, because when you're recruiting those, you're recruiting all the other ones as well. So there's, you know, the components of basic strength training, you know, three full body workouts a week, you know, focused on an upper body push, an upper body pull, a squat, deadlift, or lunge variation. You know, this is what people really need to focus on for the first, you know, couple of years of their training. And, you know, it'll stand the test of time, even if you're advanced. For people who are going through a lot of stress, physical stress, this could be an athlete who's in season or whatever, you might need to dial that back to once or twice a week full body training, because the other stuff that they're getting through their competition, you know, it's, you can't overcome, you know, all the fatigue. It's kind of like fighters, MMA fighters, you know, they're surprised to learn sometimes that the closer they get to competition, the less frequent they're doing their weight training. You know, this is, you talk to those old school UFC guys, all those guys, you know, we've all, you know, heard about, and they who are retired now, they said that was one of the biggest mistakes they made, is they did too much, you know, leading up to the competition. So you really need to manage recovery. That's the key for a soldier, for an athlete, whatever. And as I said earlier, adding a high intensity, very stressful training on top of a very stressful lifestyle, job duties, all that. It's, you know, you got to be smart with it. You got to be smart with your program. And that's why I like full body training, because it's the most efficient way to get, you know, the highest frequency of training is when you split it up and the, you know, body part splits, you work back and arms one day and chest and shoulders the other day and legs and abs, you know, the third workout of the week. You know, that's fine. It might work for some people, but if you're, you know, really trying to build strength and muscle, and I would rather have them work each one of those muscle groups twice a week. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you do that sort of split, the one I just said, the chest and biceps and the, or the, or the back and biceps and the chest tries and the legs, you know, all in different workouts, you have to do six workouts a week, you know, to work everything twice. Whereas you could just do two full body workouts a week and you have more time to recover and do other things you want in life and relax and do active recovery, you know, and all that. So I could go on, and on with that.
That's a big thing that I've always noticed it with your writing is that respect for time and really keeping time, as a value and not really, not spending your life entirely in the gym all the time, just with these long drawn out workouts and things. I also, you know, with as far as what you're talking about, that makes body weight training a really valuable technique there, because you can start to do it almost anywhere. And if you're looking to get that higher frequency kind of training with minimal impact, you know, now I see kind of the logic in going after those gymnastics rings and I just started on the gymnastics rings a few months ago. And one thing I'll say is that after, just a few minutes of a workout on there, I mean, I'm literally sore to the bone. It's ridiculous everywhere. And not just my upper body, but my glutes and everything are firing.
Yeah, the rigs are absolutely terrific. Or, you know, another, you know, people want to use straps or whatever, you know, they want to use. But the reason is because it's challenging is because it works so many more muscle fibers. You know, you have to recruit all those additional muscle fibers to stabilize the rings, you know, because they're unstable. So, you know, it's great for that. And it's great for joint health because it allows your wrist. If let's just talk about the pull up. Because, you know, getting back to the military, doing a lot of pull-ups. The one thing that's great about the rings is it allows your wrist to move freely, which takes stress off your elbows, which takes stress off your shoulders. Now, I want to mention here that I am not a fan in any way, shape, or form of chin-ups. So palms up, palms facing you, however you want to say it, when reps from a straight bar. I think it's really bad news, very high risk. This is why most people, but a lot of people have elbow problems eventually when they do them like that. If you're going to use a straight bar, that's fine. Use an overhand grip so your palms are facing away. Okay. Do them that way. I love a hammer grip. It's one of my favorite positions to do them from. But if you have the luxury and you can do the rings, because then you can do all the hand positions, you know, and you can do the chin-ups. You can do it with the palms facing you because the rings are going to allow those little rotations that your wrists need. And it's different for everyone. Little rotations your wrists need as you're going through the motion, which is going to take stress off the elbow. And as I said, it's going to take stress off the shoulder. Same is true with the push-up. You know, you do them from rings, you do them from straps or whatever. You get a lot more stabilization. Activation and stabilizing muscles throughout the core, throughout the shoulders. This is better for joint health. It's better for strength development because you're recruiting more muscle fibers, but it's better for joint health because you're sparing the stress, you know, on the joints. You're letting the wrists move freely. I can't stress how important that is for the wrist to be able to move freely. You know, dumbbells, kettlebells, they all do that. It's all great. But when you're dealing with straight bars, it can be really tricky. You know, like if you do a barbell overhead press, this is tricky, especially if you go heavy, because it doesn't allow the wrist to rotate. And for some people that's fine, but for a lot of people it's not. Stick to dumbbells, kettlebells, things like that for doing overhead work. The other thing I want to say about overhead work is use a split stance a lot. So if the dumbbell is or kettlebell is on your right side, then your left leg is forward. your left leg is forward, you know, you're in a split stance. That position when you're pressing overhead is much less stressful to the shoulder. It puts the rib cage in a better position, the shoulder in a better position to do especially heavier work. I like half kneeling stuff as well. So you're down on your right knee and you're pressing overhead. I really love a bottoms up kettlebell press. So this is where the handle is here and the bell is up here, and it's very hard to hold it, but you'll need a light load, a light kettlebell, but doing presses like that overhead from the standing position or from the half kneeling position or from the bench press position. And you can get, people can look on my Instagram page and they can find, you know, videos of this stuff if they're not familiar with what I'm talking about. But I will say this, body weight training is, it's absolutely terrific. You get more neural activation, you get more muscle fiber recruitment, you know, for the stabilizers and all that. And there's, you can use body weight training for virtually every muscle group. You can get really strong for it and you can do it almost anywhere. But I will say this though, if you did nothing but body weight exercises, you probably aren't going to have a strong enough posterior chain. That's the one thing that I'll say. So I'm talking about the muscles that run from your calves to the back of your neck, up the back of the body. And the old, there's an old strength proverb that says, you know, strong man is strong in the back of his body. So what I'm trying to say here is if you then add some sort of deadlift variation, or, you know, for people who are built to squat, a barbell squat's fine, or a goblet squat, or kettlebell swings or whatever, just doing something to strengthen the posterior chain, in addition to doing body weight exercises for virtually everything else, you're going to be fine. I mean, you're not going to be lacking any development. But I just don't want to say that it's black and white. It's, you know, it's just, oh, you only need body weight training, because I don't think that that's true. I think it's going to, as I said, lack the posterior chain. So just throw in something for that, and you're good to go.
Well, I think it gets back to kind of what you were alluding to at the beginning. I think that with the rise of social media and kind of the Instagram guru, what happens is a lot of people begin to look at these paradigms as cults, and they don't think of them as tools anymore. And I think that that's true both of training and kind of my area of nutrition, where we look at things as just cults, and you're either in this tribe or this camp or that camp. And we forget that these are tools that need to be considered and used for their functionality.
Yeah. I mean, it's very easy for people to just want to sell one approach because it's can be good for marketing. It's just like, oh, you should never do this. This is what people like or listen to say. You should never do this exercise, do this instead. Well, unfortunately, that's not real life. And, you know, there's exercises that are appropriate for, you know, lots of different populations that, you know, anything can be beneficial if it's done right, you know, depending on what the person is what the person needs. But with that in mind, you're right. It's kettlebells are great. You know, sandbags are great. Body weight training is great. You know, barbell stuff can be great. You know, all this stuff, rings, it all has its place. It's smart programming. You know, it just depends on what your goal is and what your available training time is and previous injuries and, you know, all those things. But, you know, you want to have a lot of tools in the toolbox for sure. You know, stick to following people who aren't just stuck to one dogma about, I only use this sort of training implement, because there are lots of beneficial training tools out there. I want to get back to something that we were talking about earlier, though, change the subject really quick. I want to say that for people who have traumatic brain injuries, I want to stress the importance of a high-quality fish oil. Mm-hmm. I'm not associated with any brand out there. You know, I really like Carlson fish oil. I like, I'm going totally blank here on
Nordic
another one.
Naturals.
Yeah, Nordic Naturals, exactly. Yeah. Nordic Naturals, Carlson, these are all really good ones. You want to not buy a cheap fish oil. You know, BioTest has their Flame Out, you know, things like that. But this is really important for people who have had traumatic brain injuries to make sure they're getting a good dose of that, you know, every day. You can consult with your physician. I don't want to give doses recommendations. because it's up to your physician. Another thing that I want to talk about is oxygen therapy, which has been shown to be beneficial for people with traumatic brain injuries. So you go into an oxygen chamber and do some treatments like that. So I've worked with a lot of people who've had traumatic brain injuries when I was going through my doctor physical therapy training. And those are two things that, you know, can be really beneficial. And, you know, I want your audience to know about that. And of course, you know, there's lots of other therapies that they're researching right now. But as I said, keeping that brain healthy, keeping it as relaxed as possible throughout stressful parts of the day, a time of day when you know you're going to be really stressful, try to find time to do some mindfulness and meditation right before or right after it. Focus on the things you're grateful for. Be sure that you're exercising, doing things that you enjoy, whether it's hiking or you're walking on the beach or in the park with your significant other. These things are very important for your brain health. I want to mention those things.
Absolutely. The fish oil is a big one that we've been harping on here. We had on Dr. Michael Lewis, who wrote When Brains Collide, and he's literally brought people out of comas with fish oil. By pouring it into their feeding tubes while they were there. And there's so much research just demonstrating that our brain thrives off of high DHA fish oil. And that's so important. And there's a lot of research going into the hyperbaric oxygen as far as things go. And talked to a few people about that. And it's definitely a tool that needs to be explored more through the veteran community. And I think also by the VA, as far as things that can help us. Before we, cause I know you got to sign off in a little bit, but I wanted to ask you also where do you think is the best place for the layman to kind of get information on training? I know we got T-Nation and a few other good websites out there, but there's also a lot of really, really bad stuff out there, as you mentioned. So where's a good place, maybe aside from T-Nation or also T-Nation, where people could go to really learn?
Well, there's just certain people that I recommend your audience, you know, follows and looks into. My friend, Dr. John Russin, has got great, great information. I highly recommend him. There's a lot of good, Brad Schoenfeld is really good for nutritional information. There's a lot of good ones. I'm going to leave, if I start naming names, I'm going to leave people out. But there's, you know, there's people that like, you know, like, Brett Contreras, his research on glute training and, you know, Ben Bruno does, you know, really good stuff. And, my friend Jason Ferrugia, does, you know, has good information out there. So those sorts of guys and the people that they talk about and then the people, you know, that they interview and things like that, those are, you know, all really great stuff. And then of course, Stuart McGill, one of my mentors. With all those guys out of the way, if someone just wanted really great strength training information, you cannot go wrong with Pavel Sotsaline. I mean, he is my mentor of mentors, and I owe so much to him, and he's taught me so much. And you know, he's known as the strength guy or the kettlebell guy. But he knows more about endurance training now than anyone I know. I mean, he immersed himself in 3 years of it. And as I said, he's now does seminars on it and stuff, but all the people associated with that and, you know, and the great coach of the world and people like that, like I said, I could go on and I know I'm leaving people out, but, I would just say this without mentioning any names. Cause you know, there's people out there that are a little crazy, but they have some good information. But I'll just say this. If it becomes clear that this person is just trying to do the craziest thing possible to just get you to look at her video, probably not going to be the ideal person. So start with Pavel's books. If you haven't read those, if you have back issues, Dr. Stuart McGill, Professor Stuart McGill, his back mechanic book and his book, The Gift of Injury, he did with Brian Carroll, a power lifter. They're terrific. Craig Liebenson has got really great information. Charlie Weingroff. I mean, I can go on and on. But hopefully that's enough names to get people information.
That was a lot of them. And then, last thing is, you've had your career now, you've been doing this for a long time. What excites you the most these days, and where are you looking to take your own practice? I know you've been in the fight world for a long time. You've been coaching high level athletes and things like that for a long time, but what's exciting you the most, and where do you want to go?
Well, what's exciting me the most is that I get to see my friends and colleagues out there sharing their great information. As I mentioned, like John Russin is a guy who's just grinding it out every day. He's got so much good information. I like that it's easy to share good information if you find it. Because back in the day, it would be, 15 years ago, it's like, you're asking me, here, what's some exercise that would be good for, core stability, or I heard about this Turkish get up and how do you do that? Well, now it's so simple to share it. It's just a matter of knowing who's good, sharing a good, tutorial of it. But it's now so easy to get access to great information. But unfortunately, we're flooded with lots of not so great information as well. But that's what excites me. But in terms of my own endeavors, what I'm doing is I'm doing certification courses now. So I designed a 10-week corrective exercise certification course for the International Sports Sciences Association. So people can go to issaonline.edu to find that. But I spent a lot of time working on that. So I'm excited about that and getting back to doing some seminars, and I'm working on another certification course right now. And, if people, they want to go to my website, chadwaterbury.com, or just follow me on Instagram or whatever, you won't have to remember all this stuff. I'll be talking about, various courses or things like that, or links to it or whatever. But, and then, as I mentioned earlier, my Powerful Mobility ebook on Amazon, that's a good place to start, because it's less than 10 bucks, and it's a short little, ebook, but it has some good correctives in it. And there's some links to stuff in there. It's back to my stuff that you can, follow me or whatever. So those are the things that I'm really focused on right now.
That's awesome. And we're going to get the links to all that stuff up on the show notes. And, to the NCOs out there, the corporals, the sergeants, who are leading your squads, back when I was in the Marine Corps, one of the things we used to do were hip pocket classes. And, I think a really good opportunity for the NCOs out there to do to help their Marines, to help their soldiers, is to, pick up a book like this, or to, maybe even get one of these types of certifications, and to really be able to translate this information out there to your troops, so that they can be more effective on the battlefield, and so that they can leave the military and go into their civilian lives with less trauma, with less injuries, and to allow themselves to really thrive in their post-military lives, and to also thrive in their performance while they're still in the military. So really awesome stuff. Chad, anything you want to end off with?
Yeah. Chris, when you asked me to be on here, I couldn't jump on fast enough. I'm kind of late to the Instagram game. I just kind of started posting stuff basically this year. But, I couldn't wait to get on, because I want to say to all the veterans out there, to all the military guys and gals out there, that there's no one who's nearer and dearer to my heart than that population. I mean, there's hardly a day that goes by where I just don't think about how grateful I am for our freedom and for all the sacrifices that are being made every second of each day, and how thankful I am for that. And they don't give nearly enough credit. And I want, the veterans and all our military to lead amazing lives, well after they're through with their service. And, anything that I can do to help, I'm here to help. And as you said, that the corrective exercises stuff is really important for them, because they get banged up, and we need to keep them strong. We need to keep them healthy. We need to keep them safe. And that's like I said, I thank you all from the bottom of my heart, because that's, it's really huge to me. So, you know, just thank you so much. I'll be forever grateful. And I try to surround myself with people who understand that as well and are grateful. So again, thank you very much.
Awesome. Well, definitely thank you so much for coming on to the show. And thank you for bringing this education and this awesome knowledge to our community. And I just want to say to everybody out there, no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing right now, there is always an opportunity to make yourself better. There's always an opportunity to fix something that's wrong in your life. There's always an opportunity to express gratitude, just like Chad said during this episode. And there's always an opportunity to get a workout in, to you know, work on your body, to not wear and tear at it away, but to also improve yourself step by step in a smart way. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing right now, get out there and live your best life while you can.